Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles. So, we've just had PMQs and Jeremy Corbyn led on Brexit again. Katie, what happened exactly?
So Jeremy Corbyn went on Brexit again and tried to put pressure on Theresa May about her Brexit position, which isn't that hard to do these days, given that it is in trouble. He asked her to rule out no deal. And then from that, Theresa May quite quickly said, well, I could talk to you about these things, but you won't talk to me. I've invited you for cross-party discussions. You have refused to do that, even though you have met many dubious characters in your time in politics, and that makes it difficult. Corbyn then replied saying, well, actually, I asked to talk to you, you know, back around the time of my conference speech, and I said if you moved to our position, I'd talk to you. So actually, it's you not talking to me. And while we're on the matter, can we talk about whether you are willing to budge on the customs union? Now, that is a difficult question for Theresa May, because ultimately, were Labour to play ball, you could argue that there are the numbers in Parliament for a Brexit deal if Theresa May were to commit to a permanent customs union. If the Labour front bench got behind that, then you could start to see how you might get the votes. Theresa May tried to fob off that question. She tried to throw back more technical terms, saying, well, let's be specific. What do you mean about this thing? A few acronyms here and there. And Corbyn went back again. And Theresa May didn't give a firm answer. She didn't completely rule it out, but she just tried to avoid that question. And that's because ultimately, that is a very difficult question for Theresa May. And right now, she is hoping that she can get something on the backstop, which means that she doesn't need to address it. But I do think, although she managed to move Corbyn fairly easily or bat him off because he's not the greatest at Prime Minister's questions, it wasn't a particularly good PMQs for her, I don't think, because it did highlight these horrible decisions she might have to make if she can't get something else.
So Katie, just to be clear, when Corbyn is asking for a permanent customs union, is that Norway Plus?
So Norway Plus isn't a permanent customs union. Permanent customs union, you could say, was a step towards getting there. What the Labour position is, a permanent customs union, which means that the UK couldn't do its own free trade deals. That is toxic to lots of Tory Brexiteers. A separate group want Norway Plus. That would also involve being in the single market. And people think it might also involve some form of customs union, because that would be how you'll get around a border. But the Norway Plus idea revolves around the single market. And the reason lots of people are very opposed to that is if you are a member of the single market, you would have to accept freedom of movement. So that is a step beyond the Labour position.
I mean, Jeremy Corbyn keeps saving Theresa May in lots of ways at the moment. I was just thinking, imagine if last Tuesday night after Theresa May had suffered that 230-vote defeat, rather than moving a vote of confidence, Jeremy Corbyn had stood up and said, right, it's quite clear that this deal doesn't come on the support of a House, but if Theresa May added in a customs union and dynamic alignment with workers on workers' rights and environmental protections, I would be prepared to support it. Theresa May at that point would have come under huge pressure to agree that deal with him. Because people, the great and the good, would have said to her, you've got to put the national interest first. Lots of people in her own cabinet would have said, it's a deal, we've got to do it. But because Corbyn went for a confidence vote, he returned British politics to its kind of default tribal setting. And I think, again, at PMQs today, you saw the limitations of Corbyn's approach. One, the fact he won't go in and see her gives her a very easy attack line. And I think that, you know, one of the things that all polling always shows is that voters basically think that politicians should speak to people. And the fact he won't speak to her, I think, is damaging, especially given that his defence for every wrong and he's ever spoken to in his life is, well, you have to, I believe in the importance of dialogue, you've got to find out what people think. The other way in which I think he saved her at PMQs today was when Theresa May played class SWAT and basically said, well, what do you mean? Do you mean the common commercial policy? Do you mean the customs union code? All this stuff. He couldn't answer.
He's not a details man.
Yeah, exactly. If he'd hit back and said, I want to sign up to these things, but not that thing, she would have been like, oh, okay, what am I going to do? And in a way, this is why we are so stuck on Brexit, which is Theresa May can fend off Jeremy Corbyn, but she can't make any progress of her own. And that means that in the adversarial parliamentary system that we have, you know, no one actually moves forward.
And speaking of progress of her own, she's obviously hoping to make changes to the backstop, which will win Tory Brexiteers around. But Katie, Michel Barnier doesn't sound too pleased about that in a recent interview.
No, Barnier has set the cat among the pigeons, or the Brexiteers,
even
this
more
morning, by giving this interview in which he lays out what I think the expectation was actually in government for the past few days when it comes to trying to get concessions off Brussels, where he says that he doesn't think the backstop is central to the solution. That flies in the face of what Theresa May thinks, which is if you can get a time limit, you can start to get a deal through. He's saying he actually doesn't think that that is that crucial, and actually the problem relates to the future relationship. And were you to find a consensus by all talking to one another in a parliament which is weighted towards Remain, you might be able to come up with a future relationship that could get through, and also that would lessen the need for the backstop. Now, the reason he thinks it would lessen the need for the backstop is because he's not envisaging a Canada plus 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 type model. He is envisioning something like the Labour position of a permanent customs union. So if you move to a softer position, you can just tinker around with the non-legally binding part, the political declaration, and it negates the need for a backstop. That is the opposite of what Tory Brexiteers were trying to achieve when they voted down Theresa May's deal. They were voting it down to show that it needed significant changes, but in the other direction. So I think it confirms a lot of their worst fears, really, about the scale of the defeat. And as I mentioned in my icon today, whether they have actually, in a way, they were supposed to just blow the bloody doors off, but actually they've just blown the whole thing up potentially. And I think a few of them are wondering, have they gone too far, and how can they get things back on track?
Well, James, can they get things back on track?
Well, I mean the crucial question, I mean, Katie is right, there is a growing concern among Brexiteers that they might have endangered their whole project with the scale of a defeat. The question is, how many of them are feeling this way, right? Because if Theresa May's strategy is to work, if she is to have any chance of getting a change to the backstop out of Brussels, she needs to be able to show before next Tuesday, or by next Tuesday at the latest, that she can get a deal through Parliament with changes to the backstop. Now, I think Katie in our column is undoubtedly right, but there are a growing number of Tory Brexiteers who voted against the deal last week who are now like, oh, crikey, have we done the right thing? And there is an even larger group who basically, if they got a change to the backstop, would be like, right, that's fine, now I can vote for the deal. The question is, how many holdouts are there to that? Because to have any hope of passing the deal, right, on a kind of Tory DUP strategy, she basically needs all of them to come on board, because, you know, because you can get some Labour, but not that many in these circumstances. And interestingly, I understand that one very senior member of the ERG who is seeking a compromise, he's been talking to kind of cabinet ministers about a possible solution. He is warning them, even if you've got changes to the backstop, there are kind of 15 to 20 ultras who would vote against the deal regardless. But I think that the challenge for the government is that if you look at the Murison Amendment that basically just says Parliament would vote for this deal if it had an endpoint to the backstop in it, you know, if she is going to have any hope of persuading the EU that the answer is to amend the backstop rather than go for this softer Brexit, she needs to get 321 or 322, depending on how precisely you want to do the maths, MPs to vote for that on next Tuesday, because otherwise the EU are just going to turn around. And as Katie said, as always with all Brexit results, people see in it what they want, and the EU see in that result proof that the thing that would pass the Commons would be a softer Brexit.
And James, yesterday we heard more from the European Commission as well. They were saying that a no-deal Brexit would mean a hard border on the island of Ireland.
So this was difficult for the Irish government. The Irish government has always tried to skirt over the question of what no deal means. They've always had they've always indulged in kind of intellectual gymnastics to say, on the one hand, that you have to have a backstop to keep the border as it is, but then on the other hand to say, even in the event of no deal, there wouldn't be a hard border on the island of Ireland. You know, both of those statements can't be entirely accurate. So what happened yesterday was the European Commission rather unhelpfully waded in, and its spokesman said, well, if there was a no-deal Brexit, there would have to be a border on the island of Ireland. Now, in Irish domestic politics, for Leo Varadkar to say, oh yeah, in the event of no-deal, I build a border, would be massively problematic for him. It would lead to accusations that Fine Gael is once again partitioning the island of Ireland and all this stuff. And so Varadkar yesterday got drawn into a conversation where he suggested that if there was no-deal, there would have to be some kind of conversation between the UK and the Irish government to find some arrangement that would prevent the need for a border. And the problem was that this is kind of seized on by everyone to say, well, hang on a second, isn't your insistence on the backstop risking causing what you precisely say you want to avoid? And you yourself seem to be suggesting that there are other ways of getting around this problem. Today, the Commission have tried to walk back what they said. I don't think it was an attempt to kind of deliberately pile pressure on the Irish. But I think if you add the danger for the Irish government is that you get your, if Theresa May, and this is as based on our previous conversation, this is a massive, this is an if in, you know, not just in capital letters, but in 18 point font. If Theresa May can say, look, I can pass this deal through the House of Commons with a 5-year time limit to the backstop, the danger is that you get other EU27 states beginning to say to the Irish, well, hang on a second. The choice is between that and the real risk of no deal. If you end up with no deal, you're going to have a border. So why don't we accept this time limit and then we'll look again at it in what would be 7 years' time, and, you know, we'll stand with you then. And don't forget, guys, you've got a veto on any trade deal between the UK and the EU. So you can insist on that working, either being kind of so Norway plus that there's no need for a border, or having specific Northern Ireland provisions in it. I mean, that yesterday so far in this process, the EU have you know, I don't think anyone could dispute, they played their cards very well. Yesterday was a rare misstep from the other side of the negotiating table, because it did kind of slightly open up this can of worms, which is very problematic.
So, Katie, does this open up the possibility that Ireland, because of its domestic politics, might itself be okay with a time limit at some point in the future, and gives a hope to Theresa May?
I think what's difficult is Leo Varadkar has staked so much on his handling of Brexit on this backstop that they are so reluctant to move away from it. And ultimately, even if it were the EU to try and overrule Ireland on this, just to get the deal through, the Ireland would have a veto on the final trade relationship when you get to that point. So it would, you would have something coming back. And I think we have had a reminder that basically if Leo Varadkar's gamble backfires spectacularly and we somehow end up with a no-deal Brexit, that is something which I think would cause huge domestic problems for you know, the Republic of Ireland and for his own position. But I don't think that means necessarily they're about to be say, oh, well, to avoid that, I'll go back on what was a flagship idea of mine. So it's high stakes, but I don't get the impression that the Irish side are about to back down on it.
It is worth remembering here, right, that one of the things that is making this Brexit process so difficult is that it is very hard to find a European leader at the moment who is in a particularly strong political position. So, yes, Theresa May leads a minority government in the House of Commons dependent on the support of a Democratic Unionist Party, obviously from Northern Ireland. But at the same time, Leo Varadkar is running a very unwieldy grand coalition in the Republic. You add to that Emmanuel Macron is obviously kind of fighting to save his presidency at the moment. So he's not inclined to turn around and say, oh, look, Brexit, a policy that was, you know, Frexit was a policy previously advocated by some of his leading opponents, so they slightly fudge it now, that works. Angela Merkel is obviously a lame duck leader on her way out the door, and, you know, the Commission is coming to the end of its term. So all of this stuff adds up, makes it more difficult. The only glimmer of light that I can see is this, is the EU itself says that Article 50 cannot provide for the future relationship. The backstop is meant to be superseded by the future relationship between the UK and the EU. And the Irish have a veto on that future relationship, so they could veto it if it was inadequate. So the question is whether you can talk out of both sides of your mouth at once. So Theresa May can tout that she's got a time limit to the backstop. The Irish can point out that there's no way that this trade deal between the UK and the EU is going to take 7 years to negotiate, and they'll veto it unless it contains specific Northern Irish provisions. You know, I think it is obviously more difficult on the grounds that the UK and Ireland both speak the same language, so it makes creative translation a trickier task. But that is the only glimmer of hope I can see.
But that would require talking to Leo Varadkar. I mean, that would require a different way for the Irish to be seeing this problem, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would require Varadkar to think that the Varadkar would have to be prepared to change her position of saying essentially, I will any Irish government would veto any trade deal that didn't ensure that the border was kept open, and the UK isn't going to just simply fall out onto WTO terms, so don't so don't worry about it. Yeah, we've still got this. It's obviously a harder domestic political sell for him. And I think, you know, only the Poles have broken ranks in the EU27. I don't think you're going to get any other countries breaking ranks unless Theresa May can turn up and genuinely say, look, this change gets the deal through. So unless the Murison Amendment passes, then all of this conversation we're having today is academic, you know. But if the Murison Amendment passes, the Murison Amendment is the thing that suggests a time limit on the backstop. If that can pass the House of Commons...
Which has been tabled again this week.
If that amendment is selected and then passes the House of Commons, then our conversation becomes relevant.
then you should listen to this podcast.
So this is the kind of... The hinge on which everything turns, because otherwise all this, the EU are just going to say... There's no point, like, sorting the backstop doesn't solve your problem in its entirety and doesn't get this deal ratified, so whatever. So that is the key question is, in between now, you know, in the next 6 days, can they get a majority of the House of Commons to support the Murison Amendment?
And can they get the DUP to play ball? Because last time we thought this amendment might be selected and John Bercow decided not to, the DUP didn't seem particularly willing to get behind this because it hadn't been agreed. Now, it might be that in this Brexiteer, looking back on how things haven't played out to plan, they might change their mind on that, but it would be crucial to get that.
One cabinet minister who is very supportive of this whole idea of getting an amendment passed said, you know, you need by Monday morning to have Jacob Rees-Mogg and Nigel Dodds' signature on this amendment.
That's a big ask, isn't it?
It is a big ask, but I don't think it's completely impossible, but you know, if this amendment is going to get to the races, it needs those two signatures on it by Monday morning.
And on that optimistic note, we'll end it here today. And if you like this podcast, Coffee House Shots, you can subscribe to us on the iTunes store. Do leave us a review, please. And we still have that wonderful £20 John Lewis voucher going to anyone who subscribes for £12 for 12 issues at spectator.co.uk/voucher, but not for long. We're going to be running it only until the end of the month. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.